Our next speaker is retired General Joseph Hoare, who had a distinguished career of 37 years in the United States Marine Corps. And I first came to know him when he was a Commander-in-Chief of the United States Central Command, whose area of responsibility then was just under 20, or just a few more than 20, which has grown considerably since then. He served as the Chief of Staff to General Norman P. Schwarzkopf, of renown in terms of Desert Shield, Desert Storm, the reversal of Iraq's aggression against Kuwait, the restoration of national sovereignty, political independence, and territorial integrity to Kuwait. He also served as the commander overseeing Operation Southern Watch to prevent another massacre of the southern Iraqi people that ensued after the liberation of Kuwait in 1991. He served also to enforce the naval blockade in the Persian Gulf and the Arabian Sea. And he was in charge of overseeing American military and civil humanitarian operations in Kenya, as well as in Somalia, and also in Rwanda. General Hoare, it's a pleasure and a privilege to have you here to reflect on this issue that was one that you dealt with before. Now that you're out of uniform, not constrained so much by the policies, what can we learn from you in terms of focusing on this particular thorny, controversial issue?
Thank you, John. I want to say, as I think most everybody else has, what a wonderful conference this is and how well organized it is. And I suspect that the conferees all feel the same way. I think we're blessed to have an opportunity, and I'm delighted to be here to participate. As you recall, the subject is challenges and opportunities for Iraq and Iran. One of the difficulties that we face is that we can change neither geography nor history of the region, and both are really important. And I'm not going to go into any great detail, but with respect to the geography, and General Scowcroft touched on this a moment ago, the solutions to both of these problems are, in some measure, greater or lesser, dependent on the neighbors. And if you start over in Central Asia, with India, with Afghanistan, go up into Central Asia, Russia, the countries in the Caucasus, Turkey, Ukraine, obviously Syria, Lebanon, Israel, not to mention the GCC countries and Egypt. All of these countries have a role to play to a greater or lesser degree, and we can't expect that part of it to change. But unfortunately, here in the last several years, we've had opportunities to seize that might have made some difference, particularly with respect to Iraq. Many of you probably know, it was alluded to this morning, that going back to right after 9/11, the Syrians were willing to engage with us, and at one point talked about starting all over with a blank sheet of paper with respect to coming to an agreement with Israel. And how much different our ability to have dealt with Iraq might have been had that process gone forward in 2002. Different for Syria, different for Lebanon, certainly different for Israel. And so these are the kind of things that impinge and certainly make more complicated how we're going to deal with these two countries. Also, there's the issue of history, of the First World War, and one type of imperialism of the Ottoman Empire was replaced by two other empires, the British and the French. And the legacy of that period is still with us today. Now, I don't know that you agree with me, but the invasion of Iraq was a mistake right from the start. It was wrong because Iraq was contained. They were not a danger to us. When Mr. Wolfowitz was asked about this, he indicated, well, we've got to do something. It's costing us $500 million a year. Well, that's true. The tab was $500 million a year, but an Arab country was paying that $500 million. The U.S. government was not. And so the priorities then as now should be Al-Qaeda, Afghanistan, neutralizing the Taliban, continue to work on homeland security, and obviously progress on the Israeli-Palestinian issue. There were early mistakes made, there is without a question. But today we should point out that is in every insurgency that if you plan to bring change about, you have to look at root causes. Root causes today in Iraq is the lack of political reconciliation among various regional groups, among religious groups. And we have been unable to encourage the Iraqis to move forward on some of these very, very difficult issues, the business of provincial elections, dividing up oil revenues, what to do with militias, and a whole host of other things. And there's been some minor improvements, but it's useful to point out that both in Kirkuk and in Mosul, these problems are bubbling up right now. And so while the surge helped and while security is better now than it was before, security improvement is ephemeral without change on the political side. The politics of this thing is going to actually make the difference in the long run. I would just say very briefly, because Brent covered it, but timetables are not a good idea. The enemy always gets a vote. I really like the sort of discussions that are taking place at the bilateral level between the United States and Iraq, that we're talking about a particular date, but it's also tempered by the possibility that things may change between now and then. So before I leave Iraq, we probably ought to say a few things about what could be done in the future. I would say to begin with that the new president ought to concentrate on political change, on reconciliation. He's got one of the very best ambassadors in Ryan Crocker out there. What he needs is to provide support and the direction from Washington so that everybody knows the president is involved. He can let General Petraeus, who will be at Central Command starting tomorrow, to deal with the nuts and bolts of the security issue. And then if I were in that situation, I'd find the best historian in the Ottoman Empire that I could, and then get the best cultural anthropologist to keep him company, and I'd have them follow me around every place that I went, just to make sure that we got it right, finally. Now, let's talk a little bit about Iran. The first thing is, by attacking Iraq, we automatically made Iran a regional power. We took out their major adversary in Iraq, and we neutralized, if only temporarily, the Taliban on the other side. And so now we see not only that there are regional powers, but clearly indications of aspirations to be perhaps a hegemon in the area. Their role in Iraq, their role in Syria, in Lebanon as well. And I can tell you, and I think you've heard it already, that there is real fear among the GCC countries about where all of this is going. All of them have minorities. In one case, it's not a minority, it's a majority of Shias. And as the Sheikh so correctly pointed out, they can't exchange Iran for someplace else. A friend of mine in Oman said maybe North Dakota would be nice as a replacement, but it won't work. So they have to deal with the facts on the ground, and so do we. I mentioned earlier the European involvement. In no place is it more obvious than in Iran. The British extracted concessions for oil going back to 1872. One of the major reasons for overthrowing Mossadegh in the early 50s was the oil the Anglo-Iranian oil company was about to be nationalized. One writer at the time said, speaking of the United States, by following British policy, the U.S. will gain nothing but loss of prestige and hatred. And we really have to place this in our relationship with Iran in that context. And so the answer is really engagement. Just as the five secretaries of state said at the George Washington CNN conference a while back, when the Iraq conference report came out, the Baker-Hamilton report, Jim Baker was asked about engagement by Tim Russert on the Sunday morning talk show, and Mr. Baker said famously, engagement does not constitute endorsement, and that's how we should be going into it. And I'd again emphasize Brent's point about preconditions. We need to sit down and we need to cast a very broad net of the players in the region and those other players like China and Russia that are on the National Security Council, the UN Security Council, that will have a role to play in all of this. We need to bring in the IAEA. I had some experiences with them over several years, and it's very easy to disparage them, but I think they're a very effective organization. And the end result is going to be compromise. Now, you shouldn't let me get away without talking about the possibility of an air attack on nuclear positions in Iran. So let me try and talk about that for a few moments. I would say, first of all, that it's one of two possibilities. The first is that this may be the best example in recent times of a highly coordinated threat of force against a country in order to bring about a diplomatic solution. The threat of force is far more useful than its actual applications, I think everybody here understands. And so it's possible that that's what we're observing. I'm not sure. However, I can tell you that for people that think that this is serious, I would put it in the utter folly department. The people that fly airplanes and drop bombs that I talk to seem to think that, A, we don't know enough about where the facilities are and we don't have the right kind of weapons to do the job. Again, logistics and geography play a key role. Sure, we can force the Straits of Hormuz. Sure, we can do a lot of things. But I should also share with you a conversation that Hamid bin Jassim, at the time he was the foreign minister of the state of Qatar, had in Tehran. He's now the prime minister. Hamid bin Jassim went to Tehran and explained to his interlocutors that the state of Qatar had supported the United States in the attack against Iraq, but was not going to support the United States in an attack against Iran. And his interlocutors said to him, you've got it all wrong. If we're attacked by the United States, we don't have the missiles to strike the United States, but we can certainly strike all of the facilities up and down the coast of your friends. And so Qatar, as I think you know, has about a $20 billion capital expenditure in a joint venture with Qatar Gas and ExxonMobil, and there are similar arrangements all over the region. This is perhaps why UAE is investigating getting anti-missile missiles. And I know that in some cases, from personal experience, that some of the GCC countries are carrying on engagement right at this very moment. And so it is going on. The point is that that we're in a very very dangerous situation. I think Brent described it very well. It's in our interest to engage. It's in our interest to broaden the base and bring as many other players in as we can. It's in our interest to find a great compromise here that will work to everybody's advantage. Thank you.